from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
High waves and strong winds from Hurricane Lenny caused destruction over a wide area of the Caribbean. We'll have the story from all the islands that have been hit, as well as an assessment of the damage. Also in the news, Air Jamaica announces a deal with Virgin Atlantic. I'm Jessica Robertson, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Hurricane Lenny has pounded the Virgin Islands, causing massive destruction and damage. It's now located just south of St. Martin, and the islanders there are preparing for the worst. In a moment, we'll be going to St. Croix, the worst hit of the U.S. Virgin Islands. But first, Mike Jarvis in St. Martin, who I spoke with a short while ago.
Situation at the moment as we speak is that the eye of this very vicious and ferocious Hurricane Lenny is said to be now just about between 10 and 12 miles off the southwestern coast of St. Martin and closing in on us a little bit slowly, which makes it a little bit more stressful indeed, but certainly coming directly our way. We are in the midst of the eye wall at the moment. I don't know if in the background you can hear the winds howling around here and things basically slamming all over the place. So we are in the eye wall, and at the moment we are getting wind gusts in excess of 100 miles an hour. It's looking very dreadful, the fact that this thing is taking a lot longer than we had previously thought to pass our way. It is only now approaching us.
What damage has been reported so far?
The reports of damages are coming in quite constantly now and increasingly so. In my area, I've already seen a number of roofs falling apart. There are reports that the town area is basically a disaster area at the moment. Earlier on, I'd mentioned about this expanse of water we have in the middle of town called the Great Salt Pond. Now, that has overflowed its banks and is now flowing into the center of Phillipsburg. There is another pond next to the Great Salt Pond. This is a smaller freshwater pond. That has also overflowed its banks, and there's only a strip of road between these two ponds, the Great Salt Pond and the freshwater pond. So these two ponds are now meeting, and we have all this rush of water. A number of businesses have been flooded out, roads have been flooded out, and there's tremendous concern about the state of affairs in the capital, particularly along the commercial center of Front Street, which is on the western coast. It's right on the beach. You walk off Front Street, you walk onto the beach. So the storm surge is now coming up, and I understand that water is just from the seas just washing all over Front Street into the adjacent street and about two more streets into that before you get to the salt pond. So it's a big mess of water in town at the moment and practically all over the island.
Mike Jarvis reporting on the extensive damage St. Martin has already sustained, and more is expected. For all the islands affected by Lenny, its attention so late in the season is unwelcome at a time when they're preparing for the winter tourist season. It's the biggest earner of revenue for them and could mean significant financial loss. Wycliffe Richardson has a story from Anguilla.
From early Wednesday afternoon, the island's main money earner, tourism, suffered a major setback, with several beaches in the south and western tips of the island, where the hotel properties are located, severely eroded as a result of sea swells which reached near 10 to 12 feet. Mimi Graton, executive director of the Anguilla Hotel and Tourism Association, says around 300 guests have been accounted for in 13 properties across the island. She added that a hurricane coming so late in the year and just at the beginning of the busy winter tourist season wouldn't give the properties a chance to recover until early in the new year, seriously affecting the expected boom in millennium travel to the island. Residents in the island's capital, the Valley, were without electricity from as early as 7 o'clock Wednesday night. The service to other parts of the island was eventually switched off by the utility company 6 hours later as a precautionary measure. Concern has also been expressed about the survival of crops, as the island, already saturated from rains over the past weeks, continued to experience more rainfall, 8 inches of which have been recorded at the Agricultural Department in the past 24 hours. No reports of injury or damage to personnel or property have been reported, but 5 persons are at one of the emergency shelters. Chairman of the National Disaster Preparedness Committee, Acting Governor Roger Cousins, told BBC Caribbean Report all preparations have been made for the hurricane and the island was ready to meet any eventualities. For BBC Caribbean Report, Wycliffe Richardson in the Valley.
St. Croix has so far taken the biggest hit, and we're going live now to Alroy Harrison of the Virgin Islands Emergency Management Agency, VITEMA, who's come straight from a briefing on the situation. Mr. Harrison, what's been the extent of the damage so far?
Good evening. From my observation here at the EOC, we had some damages mostly on the western side of St. Croix and on the eastern side of St. Croix. As you know, as maybe you don't know, the pier, the tourist ship pier in Frederickstead was damaged. We lost part of the pier, and we also had some heavy and high storm surge on the waterfront of Frederickstead, which is in the Strand Street area, where the storm surge came over and as high as hitting the buildings across the street and bringing debris up onto the pier and also onto the street in that area. We took some damages to the recreation pool down at Sandy Point, and also the fish market pier that was also washed away. We got some calls about some homes on the western side that lost their roofs. Our National Guard headquarters also took a beating. Their roof, part of their roof section went. And we had a few damages elsewhere throughout the islands. But some of the schools also took some damages, and we're receiving those information as we talk. We have emergency managers out there which is doing a preliminary damage assessment. And by tomorrow morning, they should have to us with their percentage in damage, whether it be minor damage, major, or extreme damage to
Mr. Harrison, structure. Mr. Harrison, have there been any casualties reported?
As of late as 15 minutes ago, we had no deaths relating to Hurricane Lenny.
And how soon before islands can begin to pick up the pieces after this storm?
Well, at this moment, the water power, which is our electrical utilities here in the island, are assessing and trying to maybe start energizing after they assess the situation by working on different feeders. They need to work from feeder 1 to 10, and I think they will start with feeder 1 first, which will be putting some of the most important facilities and department back in function, like the hospital and the police and maybe the prison area.
Mr. Harrison, thank you very much. VITEMA's Deputy Director of Operations. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. A precedent was set in Cuba this week when some of the visiting heads of state who attended the Ibero-American Summit were able to meet with dissidents in Havana. But was it a one-off? Or has the door been opened for that kind of dialogue on a regular basis? Ken Richards has been trying to find out.
With the Ibero-American Summit now no more than a historical fact, Cuba is settling back to business as usual, communist style. But the country won't be able to ignore the appeals made there for democracy and human rights. Mexican President Ernesto Zedillo said in Havana that Cubans have the right to give opinions, the freedom to meet to dissent, and the right to choose. The Panamanian president also expressed a similar view, but Cuba's Fidel Castro stood firm against these pronouncements. However, journalist Tom Gibb thinks the Ibero-American summit has set a trend of foreign heads meeting dissidents.
It would be quite hard for him to stop future heads of state and government delegations from making those kinds of visits. I think it's much more likely that he might try and crack down a bit on the dissidents themselves.
But on the other hand, President Castro may be happy for these dissidents to have more of an international voice.
Because one of the big ironies is that almost all of the people who met with the visiting heads of state, and indeed with Governor Ryan from Washington, are dissidents who quite publicly opposed the U.S. embargo as well.
But while the moderate dissidents having an international voice might be tolerated by the regime, it would be a different matter if they tried making noises locally. Attempts to hold street demonstrations or build political parties in Cuba could meet with a harsh response from the authorities in Havana.
Ken Richards reporting. Air Jamaica and British-based Virgin Airlines signed a letter of intent at this week's World Travel Market in London to share various aspects of their business. The two airlines will now sit down to hash out exactly how a cooperative effort will best serve them and their customers. There is no word on when they will begin working together, but I spoke with head of Air Jamaica, Gordon Butch Stewart, and started by asking him why such a cooperative effort could not be arranged with a regional airline such as BWIA.
We tried a lot some time ago when Ken Gordon was the chairman, and we got somewhere. But a lot of the routes that Air Jamaica fly, BWIA also fly that, so there's not a lot to be gained in that regard. On the areas of check-in and those services, I think there are areas there to cooperate. However, you know, it's two very different cultures. I mean, Air Jamaica and Virgin are much closer together in terms of culture. And by culture, I mean extreme in terms of services than, say, a BWI. So some of those things, the fact that you're Caribbean, you think that it's a lot easier to work out. They're not.
What is Air Jamaica's financial situation at the moment? How healthy a state is the airline in?
Air Jamaica has been ahead of all the budgets on the Way Forward plan, which takes us into profitability next year. For the last 24 months, each month we've been ahead on the plan. So it's working well. You know, airlines are a big finance package. And when you start from scratch, which is basically what Air Jamaica did, because we had to get rid of all the old aeroplanes and renew all the services, department by department, they never had any systems or accountability. So you had to bring all that back in. It takes a bit of time. Most airlines go through the same process when they're privatized.
Air Jamaica's Gordon Butch Stewart. An inquiry into a massive jailbreak from Jamaica's maximum security prison has ended, with accounts of major breaches of security at the prison. The commission investigated the conditions that led to the escape of 23 prisoners. Karen Weir has been following proceedings at the inquiry.
Warders being drunk on duty and buying prisoners' drinks. Prisoners being assisted to escape through the prison's main gate by prison staff. And inmates wearing old warders' uniforms. These were just some of the allegations made over 56 days during more than 48 testimonies given at the inquiry into the mass jailbreak at Jamaica's Tower Street Maximum Security Prison in Kingston. This week's testimony by a corporal who has worked at Tower Street for the past 24 years added to the tales of gross negligence, incompetence and corruption that has come out of this investigation. He revealed that inmates have access to keys that are used to open cells, as well as being given padlocks by prison staff to lock their individual cell. He then went on to explain that routine checks on how many prisoners were in their cells were conducted by wardens banging on cell doors and shouting to prisoners how many were in the cell. If the figure given by prisoners corresponded to the amount written on a blackboard slate outside the cell, the warder moved on without verifying this information. These disclosures came just before a leak yesterday that a warder had just been caught this week with 13 handy-sized bags of marijuana in his possession on the prison compound. This leak goes some way in highlighting the hard task Colonel John Prescott, the Commissioner of Corrections, has on his hands in trying to put right the wrongdoings at Tower Street.
That report from Karen Weir. Well, as we've been reporting, Hurricane Lenny has caused extensive damage and destruction on several islands and has left four people dead. Oren Gordon now joins me with the latest.
Thanks, Jessica. The latest from the National Hurricane Center is that Hurricane Lenny has virtually landed on St. Martin. It's now a Category 3 storm, but the islanders are not going to take a lot of comfort from that, I'm afraid. The thing about Lenny is the unusual direction it's taking, west to east instead of east out of Africa as usual. In Nevis, for example, it means that the usually sheltered west coast has taken a pounding. The flagship Four Seasons Hotel is closed, and that'll mean significant loss of tourism revenue, as we heard from Wycliffe Richardson in Anguilla earlier. Antigua has had to delay its glitzy launch of the tourism season because of Jose. And now this. Lenny's dumping a lot of rain all over the island, so there's the prospect of further deaths from flooding and mudslides. In Dominica, the waves are reported to have reached as high as houses. One man was swept away and is presumed dead. Another thing about Lenny is that he's making his presence felt over a very wide area. heavy rain and rough seas as far south as Grenada and as far to the southwest as the coast of Colombia. We'll, of course, be providing more news as we get it. Jessica.
Thanks, Oren. Well, that's it for all of us at BBC Caribbean Report. I'm Jessica Robertson saying goodbye from London.